I feel like I should do like the emergency exits are there and by that window. Gee, show them where the emergency exit is. There we go. Besides giving a talk tonight on a subject that I'm very interested in, I'm going to try to do something that, if I remember, and as I am prone to forget, I might not do this, but Noah was telling me that in one of the retreats he did, he played a game with the other Dharma teachers where they challenged each other to drop a song title into their Dharma talk and see if people would notice. And they were Iron Maiden song titles and phrases. Or were they Iron Maiden? I don't remember. He told me, I think they were Iron Maiden. So, am I going to do that? Yes, I'm going to try to do that. So, if you notice, you can smile or wave when you think I've done it. Don't shout or jump up. Or there's no prizes here. You don't get anything other than maybe a little karma medal in your mind. But I was supposed to do it during the East Coast retreat, and I had even worked out the Cheap Trick song, "I Want You to Want Me," and I totally forgot. And I'll probably forget tonight as well. But my hint is it's probably going to be from a hair metal band. So there you go. Or at least a metal band. Okay. So where is the start here of my... Okay. Here is much of our unhappiness, of course, comes from the mind's annoying internal chatter, our suffering and our stress is often not only caused by the first arrow of people acting unskillfully or frustrations in life, but very often it's caused probably more than any other source is probably that internal chatter. And interestingly enough, I was thrilled to read this. Various people sent me some research papers on this, and I do read them. There was a study by the NIH, National Institute of Health, by a bunch of different universities, including Dartmouth and Aberdeen, and what else was there? UCLA and Harvard. And what they discovered is that there's this what's known as a default mode in the neural circuitry of the mind, and that the default mode is this sort of baseline that the mind reverts to whenever there's not a task that we have to focus on. And, of course, it turns out that this default mode has a lot to do with chatter in the brain. And there's a direct correlation between the... what is it? What axis is it? It's the medial temporal lobe. And it turns out this is very hardwired to the part of the brain called the amygdala, which is capable of releasing stress. And what happens is the amygdala is hardwired to this sort of, oh, I've got nothing to focus on for the moment. I'm giving myself permission to just let my mind jump around and wander. And it triggers the amygdala, which then triggers something called the, of all things, the HPA circuit, which you know is the hippocampus, the pituitary gland, and the adrenal gland, which releases cortisol and adrenaline, which are stress hormones and neurotransmitters, which then stress up the body. So there's this immediate tension in the body of what's known as somatic markers. The various areas of our body get tense. And then a part of the brain called the insula says, oh no, I'm all stressed out, I'm tense. Something's wrong, especially because I'm thinking all these, jumping around all these thoughts in my mind. So stress is triggered by this mind that feels untethered, unfocused, that is allowed to just wander at will. Interestingly enough, at this exact same period that this, I would say, study by neurologists came out, there was also a study by psychologists at Harvard, and their names are Killingsworth and Gilbert, and they did something really fun. They created an iPhone applet called Track Your Happiness. Track Your Happiness. And they had massive participation. Most clinical studies don't, you know, you're lucky if you get a few hundred people. This had tens of thousands of people participating in this little sort of app where people would just note what their minds was doing and how much physical stress and emotional stress they felt at any given time. And they noticed that 50% of the time when we're, especially when we're not engaged in a task, the mind wanders, and when it wanders, it goes to stress. It goes to thoughts that cause it discomfort. What kinds of thoughts? Well, it turns out that when the mind wanders, it doesn't go to thoughts like, yippee, everything's wonderful. The brain was set up to survive in very, 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 very challenging, dangerous situations. The brain has changed very little since, I think, the last 10,000, 20,000 years, certainly, and it was pretty much wired to survive and to worry about all the bad possible outcomes that could occur. Because when the brain was set up, the average lifespan was not even 20 years of age. You would be fucking lucky if you lived long enough to have sex and keep the species going before you were killed by a woolly mammoth, I suppose, or an alligator. I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about, but you get the idea that everywhere there were dangers, death was lurking at every corner, diseases, other clans, warring factions, wild animals. Even in the Buddha's time, 2,500 years ago, so many of the suttas are, he uses example of wild elephants and tigers and snakes, which are hardly the things that we worry about when we go into the subway in the morning to work, or when we get freaked out by somebody making a slightly rude comment at our job, or when we're online for a sandwich, and which sets the mind off as if they are, in fact, that other person is a woolly mammoth about to attack us. Because the mind is, or the brain is, hardwired to worry and fret and look out for dangers. And the brain really hasn't quite, as of yet, adapted to the fact that the world has changed greatly, and that we now, as the dominant species, have pretty much set things up so that the dangers that were everywhere are not quite as ever-present today. So, all this mind-wandering leads to stressful thoughts, which leads to a triggering of the stressors, which tighten up the body, make the body contracted, which then reports to the insula and says, oh no, there's something wrong, and then it reports back to the brain, there really is something wrong because I'm really tight, which is, in fact, we are just tight because we were thinking stressful thoughts, and the circuit repeats and loops, and we get into this neural feedback loop. So when there's all this stress present, what happens? Well, the mind looks for things to calm it down. The brain looks for things to soothe it. And depending upon the amount of stress that's going on, if there's a lot of obsession and a lot of discomfort in the body, the brain will go to the sledgehammer of stress release. It goes to those calming behaviors that hammer out immediately, get rid of in one fell swoop the stress. If there's not too much stress, if the stress levels are light, if we're just having some mind wandering, some stress levels in the thoughts and in the body, the mind will often go to things that don't immediately relieve stress or act like a sledgehammer. So there's a continuum of behaviors, some of which work immediately like a sledgehammer and get rid of the stress immediately, like drugs and alcohol. And then as we move gradually over, then there's things that don't work as quickly, like there's sex and shopping and social networking. And then there's things that are increasingly skillful, like exercising, riding your bike, or calling up a friend. And then there's all the way at the other end, there's meditation. So, why is it that the calming mechanisms that work really quickly, like a sledgehammer, why is it that they're bad news? What's wrong with... Last night when I was teaching, I said, what's wrong with a shot of crack? Completely. That's what happens when you've been sober for a long time. You lose the touch with the streets. You lose touch with the streets, these kids with their shots of crack. And their... They're drinking that heroin and they're... anyway, so there's four things wrong with the sledgehammer approach to getting rid of, or at least four things wrong with the sledgehammer approach to getting rid of stress really quickly. The first is that things that tend to work very quickly, immediately, tend to have, while the Buddha said they have short-term release but long-term bad news. For example, obviously, if we become addicted to booze or food or drugs or to gambling, the long-term results are going to be bad, often for our health, often for our pocketbook. Certainly there'll be a toll to be paid in our lives in relation to other people. We'll lose a sense of respect for ourselves and the respect of others. So there's long-term negative results from things that work really quickly. The second factor to consider is things that work really quickly, that relieve the mind in an instant of its stress, tend to dissipate just as quickly. So there's a letdown, a crash, things that immediately work, then immediately stop working. That feeling of buying something when we're stressed out and wanting to find a purpose in life, and for a moment there's the swipe of giving the credit card, and there's a sense of being complete, and then walking home with the package and then opening it up, and there's the new iPhone or iPad or eye something, eye clothes, and there it is, bang, and then 10 minutes later it's like, there's once again the return of the wandering mind, the self-centered, stressful thoughts, what's going to happen, how am I going to pay my bills, and those stressful thoughts then trigger the body, which gets tight, and we're back in the cycle. So that's the second thing to consider. And the third has completely crossed my mind, so has lost my... There we go. We develop what's known as tolerances, which means that the mind likes to wander and create stress, so eventually it habituates to a lot of these short-term releases, and it gets used to it, and it takes more and more and more booze or food or drugs or money or approval or fame to make the mind turn off. That famous study that for businessmen who are rich, the joy and relief that they got from making their first $1 million apparently then takes 5 million, and then 10 million, and then 20 million to reduplicate the same sense of security and ease and self-esteem that it temporarily gives. So we need more and more and more and more and more stuff to turn off the mind. The mind becomes habituated. But the most problematical reason why short-term things that work really quickly to get rid of stress are not good is that it creates an addictive cycle called the, if you want to know, it's called the dopamine cycle. But basically what happens is the search for how can I get more money, how can I get more approval, how can I have more sex or buy more or consume more, this creates this even more stress than the wandering thoughts even created. We're adding stress onto an already stressful situation because the dopamine reward system, what does it do? It tightens up the body even more. It creates even more dopamine, which triggers even more stress in the brain. So we're adding stress on top of stress. And the only thing that relieves eventually this stress is the increasingly shorter and shorter release that's given by these short-term things. We need more and more, and the relief is shorter and shorter. Now, of course, the Buddha said, some things are a little bit more skillful. Turns out that sex, when you're having sex, you're only mind-wandering 25% of the time. So that feels a lot better than when you're just completely task independent, in which case your mind is wandering about 50% of the time. The more your mind is wandering, the more stress. Now, it turns out that there are other things, though, that relieve the mind of wandering, focus it. My way of turning off my mind is jumping on my bike and riding around the city. That'll wake you up really quickly. Believe me. And that's a more skillful... I'm sure that my mind is wandering at most 10% of the time in that endeavor. The things in life that we turn out loving, the tasks that we really enjoy, are the things that turn off the mind from wandering, that focus it on something, a task, that turn off the default mode network, that stress-inducing, what's going to happen to me in the future, how am I going to pay my bills, you know, what are other people thinking about me, all those thoughts triggered by the ventral media, so medial lobe. So there's a continuum from the unskillful all the way to the more and more skillful. Now, the problem with even skillful releases, like riding one's bike or exercising addictively or, writing, which is skillful, or doing one's art, is that every form of external way we turn off the mind keeps triggering slightly that dopaminergic reward thing that keeps an underlying stress going, that keeps us in the cycle. So even skillful releases, like calling up a friend or talking to someone that you care about or painting a painting or photographing or fixing up the house, all these external things, while they don't cause long-term suffering, while they don't certainly they don't create the level of addiction that the really sledgehammer approaches, still these external rewards, these external tasks, still do trigger a loop of need to do it. And they also make the mind conditioned to the idea that the only way it can turn itself off is by doing something external. Riding the bike. Well, if that's the only way I can turn off my mind, by riding my bike, I'm fucked. Because I'm not going to do that at 5 o'clock in the morning, right? Or 2 o'clock in the morning. I'm not going to be able to do that when I'm at work or when I'm just... There's only so many times of the day that jumping on one's bike and riding around to reduce mind wandering is a successful strategy. But it turns out that mindfulness, being aware of what's going on inside, relaxing the breath, focusing on releasing the somatic tightness in the body, which disconnects us from the mind-wandering thoughts, the mind jumping around wherever it wants. It gives it an internal task, it turns out, doesn't continue the dopaminergic cycle. It liberates us. It breaks the chain. As the Buddha said, there's four kinds of actions. There's bad and good, there's good, and then the fourth is meditation, he said, spiritual practice, which completely ends, he said, the cycle of actions, the addictive need to turn off the mind. Why does it end it? Because by the fact that we're no longer wandering, we're no longer allowing the mind to drift wherever it wants all the time, we're no longer creating the core stress that creates the need to calm it down in the first place. Every time we practice mindfulness, meditation, inner focus, we're literally interrupting and rewiring what's known as the default mode. And to make it clear, because I want to make sure this is understood, it's a really wonderful. At Yale, they said that they found that experienced meditators start dewiring the parts of the brain that are linked to mind wandering and start wiring up the parts of the brain that are associated with self-monitoring the internal state and interrupting the cause of stress. So every time we meditate, we're literally rewiring the brain. We're literally doing what 20,000 years of evolution couldn't do. We're literally rewiring our brains to adapt more successfully to the way the world is now. We're now no longer living in a brain where the default network is this part of the what's going to happen to me, what are other people thinking about me, how am I going to pay the bills, etc. And we're actually wiring a part of the brain called the cingulate, which is not associated with mind wandering. It's actually associated with continuous focus, task related. So you are literally part of a grand movement of mind rewiring. You are upgrading your mind. You are clicking software upgrade and downloading. You're not downloading anything, but you're uploading you're doing something that's rewiring your brain so that the software and the hardware, frankly, is more appropriate. You're keeping that little Mac in your upstairs up here. You're keeping it powerful and useful. You're not allowing it to just default back into worry. The way we do it is again and again and again by training the mind not to go out in search of relief out in the world, but to bring the awareness within and to use our ability to stay focused and compassionate to relax the body. And as we relax the body, that very action of keeping the mind on a task shuts down the stress-related thoughts. So, I hope that there was something of interest in there. That's your little neuroscience talk that I like to give every once in a great while about stuff. Next week will be on relationships and what Buddhism offers on dealing with those difficult things called relationships. So I thank you for listening. Hope you got something out of it. And now is your time to ask any questions.